Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hour number two, what's happening? Tinky and Tierney on this Tuesday, coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio with every single score change during Super Bowl 55. Somebody's going to win $50,000 in the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free. RocketMortgageSquares.com. So what we'll actually do here is we're going to push the Kyrie Irving stuff to the back end of this hour and have one all-encompassing conversation about the Nets. Last night was phenomenal. I mean, you got a little glimpse of what, you know, Durant and Harden. Harden's not even in great shape yet, and he's still not even shooting the three ball great yet, but he's going to. And some issues with the Bucks that I just don't see them, really with Giannis. I don't see it correcting itself, but rather than do Kyrie here and then get to the Nets at a different topic later in the hour, we'll just do it all a little later. So let's get to a team that sounds like the Nets, but is not the Nets. And the Nets definitely don't have this problem. They might have a problem with Kyrie, although right now it seems to be offset. He seems like he's ready. But the Mets have a definite problem. And, you know, their GM, who they hired, whatever it was ago, I don't know, whatever the timeline, couple of weeks, I guess. And they bring in and Francisco Lindor, who was a name that's been on a lot of radars for a while, you know, good glove, pop, charisma, middle of his prime, great get, aggressive get, the kind of get that, quite frankly, the Mets generally don't get, they got. And the energy with the Mets is undeniable. And then you wake up to these stories. Jeff Passan had it. I believe Mina Kimes was reporting on this as well from ESPN. And basically, it is a stream, a barrage, a frightening amount of interaction, unwanted and unacceptable interaction of, you know, private part shots, you know, badgering, borderline psychotic pursuit of a female who was in the game and no longer is in the game. So Steve Cohen, who now owns the team, did not waste any time in firing the man that he just hired. And I mean, it's funny. I'm not saying people will probably take this the wrong way. Everybody's like lauding Stevie Cohen for doing this. That's the only thing you could do.
Yeah.
When you look at what this woman was subjected to. I mean, did you see how many texts?
Yeah. I think it was 62. Was it 62 straight text, I believe it was?
What, are you out of your mind?
Unanswered text message. And this is, we're obviously talking about Jared Porter, who is the now former general manager, even though he only had the job for, I don't know, a couple weeks, whatever it was, after Stevie Cohen took over. He was formerly with the Chicago Cubs back in 2016. And this is when all this occurred, by the way. This didn't happen like last week. It didn't happen last month or last year. This happened almost 5 years ago, but it still is out there. And I think there's probably, it's going to be some sort of lawsuit that's pending. And that's why this is coming out now. But Stevie Cohen made the only decision that he could. Mm-hmm. And I think with a guy who, I don't know, he's not struggled because he's a multi-billionaire many times over. He didn't struggle to acquire the Mets, but the journey for him to acquire the Mets, which was long, I think, hoped for by Mets fans, maybe even Major League Baseball as a whole. Once it finally got done and he approached it the way that he approached it, BT, like having Twitter conversations with fans and, you know, being very upfront and out front as the new owner, I think he basically being transparent about everything as soon as this came to light, he had there was no choice. There was no other choice other than to fire.
No
Jared
other choice.
No. And you know,
absolutely
you,
not.
And you have to, you know, start with the clean slate if you're Stevie Cohen and trying to get this Mets thing right, which has been so askew for so many years for myriad different reasons. But this is the first time that he had a choice to make. And I think it was an easy decision, but this is the first time he had a choice to do something that was right. And I think everybody will see this as right.
Yep. You know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like when Adam Silver first took over as the commissioner and the Donald Sterling stuff hit.
Yeah.
It bought him additional equity.
That's right.
Because he did the right thing, but there was no other option like that. They're really, when Stevie Cohen saw this, when he first learned of this, I can't imagine that even for a nanosecond, like he had to, within himself, this internal struggle, there is absolutely no way that he was conflicted as to what to do. Let's see. There was, I don't think I could find this because it was within a stream of tweets within the comments to Stevie Cohen's initial tweet.
Yep.
So he just wrote simply, this is 8 hours ago, "We've terminated Jared Porter this morning. In my initial press conference, I spoke about the importance of integrity, and I mean it. There should be zero tolerance for this type of behavior." 66,000 likes, a couple of thousand comments, whatever, and almost 10,000 retweets. And somebody, and I can't find it, but I read it, so I'll retain it.
Yep.
Somebody wrote to him, and they said, well, great. You know, how does Porter get his life back in this cancel culture that we live in? And I thought Stevie Cohen was right on point. You know, he basically said, "Hey, listen, I've got 400 people to worry about. I can't worry about somebody who so clearly did the wrong thing. This is not a cancel cult. Like, this is not canceling somebody because you're reacting to the masses on social media, even if they aren't always right.
Yeah,
their instincts might be wrong, and companies still sometimes unfortunately react to that. This is not that. This is the owner of the Mets saying, dude, would I want this guy around my daughter? Would I want this guy around my niece? Would I want this guy around my wife? This guy sounds like a psychopath.
Yeah, and the answer obviously is no. And a lot of people will say, look, the baseball, really any business, sport, whatever, people have been getting away with doing this for years. Not that that makes it acceptable, but it has been going on for years. I give a lot of applause to Stevie Cohen for who cares how it was previously done. Right? This is your ship, and this is all he needs to cares about. It seems like right now is getting the Mets right, and there's no way that he could have started his tenure as the owner of the Mets with this hanging around, even if it was, you know, drawn out in court and disproven and he was exonerated, who knows, whatever happens when these things come up like this.
Yeah.
He couldn't have this negativity hanging around one of the key principles of his team. So, I mean, this was a no brainer to me. It really was. These things come up often, and often we don't hear what happens because the owner doesn't take a definitive action, but this is Stevie Cohen taking definitive action, and it's the absolute right thing to do. You're not going to hear anyone argue opposite of this.
Not a soul. It's the easiest decision he'll make all calendar year.
Yes.
The easiest decision he'll make all calendar year. Now, let's contrast this, because this is, you know, we could talk about for 15 minutes what would drive somebody to send 60 unanswered text messages to somebody that you don't even have a relationship with.
Yeah, I know.
It is what it is, and I'm not here to judge Jared Porter, although it's pretty easy to do that when you look at what he did. I can judge him, actually. When you send pictures of yourself... give me a break, dude.
Yeah. I don't know if it was himself, though. I think it was just lewd internet.
Oh, no, I thought it, no, because, well...
Maybe it was both. I don't know.
Okay, because...
It's what he claimed. He claimed it was
fair enough.
Internet, whatever. I don't
and you know what? I guess you have to leave that possibility open to be fair to all parties, because there's no shot of his head.
That's right.
There's, you know, from basically the torso down, he's laying on a hotel bed. If it's him, to be fair, that's true, to be responsible. But I know there was one sequence of text where he asked... the woman reporter, who's no longer in baseball now, to join him at a hotel, I believe in the Los Angeles area, and he sent a bunch of different pictures, allegedly, from the hotel. You know, I think it was like a shot of like scallops or other nice, you know, entree, the pool, a picture of a bathtub, suggestive stuff, saying, come join me, basically, we'll have a great weekend. And I can only assume it's him, but again, I don't know for sure. and a picture of, you know, from below the waist, which is just moronic, dude. I don't understand. But so forget about that. That is what it is. If you're dumb enough to send a picture, like, I wouldn't even send
you don't know.
I wouldn't even send a picture like that to my wife, because God forbid I send it to my parents by accident. Like, I'm so scared of that stuff, right? Like, I wouldn't even send it to my wife.
Can you imagine?
You know? I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. Now.
No, I mean to your parents.
Oh, well, you've seen on social media, like, gaffes, like social media mistakes.
Yes.
And, you know, basically a daughter sending something to her dad or a son sending something to his mom. Maybe not even a picture, but very lewd wording that would just, would creep me out to the core of my existence, like it would everybody. Here's the real issue, though, all right? And this is what has been so problematic and took forever to come to the surface, right? Yes, because there's now this beautiful little thing we call the phone, an iPhone, it's a computer, you do whatever you want, you order stuff, you order food, you get an Uber, you take pictures, you take video. I have an app on here where you hit your tee shot, it shows the trajectory with like the CBS arrow, like the craziest stuff is on this phone, right? But it's also a digital imprint to what you do, all right? And the problem is that when, this is easy with Jared Porter, but think about, I mean, I could go back forever, but just about like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, when instead of a photograph of oneself to a woman who wanted no part of it, it was a suggestive, risque comment at the bar. It was, you know, pushing up on her aggressively. It was being overly suggestive verbally, making her feel uncomfortable, you know, compromising her inner space. And those have gone unpenalized.
Yeah.
I mean, for decades. Let's call it for what it is.
Well, luckily we're in an era where you can easily be identified and penalized, as is the case. And that's not just for this stuff. It's any abhorrent behavior, as we've seen over the last few weeks, BT. It's easily recognizable who does what, and you're going to get penalized for it. And Stevie Cohen is just the perfect example of a guy, an owner, stepping into the league and doing it the right way so that his team has the correct reputation. And that's all you can ask for from an owner. And so I know Mets fans were excited already when Stevie Cohen took over, simply because he has the cash to spend and burn on making the team right. But if he's going to make the right decisions when some other teams might not have, you got to do nothing but give him kudos.
You can't be a world-class organization, and this is not me taking a little Yankee shot at the Mets. But the Mets are not a world-class organization.
No.
Maybe they're in the formative stage of becoming that. The Yankees are a world-class organization. The Dodgers are a world-class organization. The Mets are not. But step one in becoming, you know, a world-class organization is having a culture of accountability and a workplace that is non-threatening. I mean, that's the first step. If you can't even take that baby step, you have no shot. And what I find, and I'll never know the answer to this, but what's interesting, like, if it wasn't digital and it was just she filed a sexual harassment lawsuit, her word against his word, would he be fired? The answer, the answer would probably be no. And I think that it would probably be, I can't prove that, but think about all the people that got the benefit of the doubt unfairly.
Yeah.
Because there was no evidence, and that went on to have 20, 30, 40 year careers.
That's right.
With no penalty.
Yeah, I agreed.
But also some who were unfairly victimized by false claims. I mean, it works both ways.
It does.
Not in this instance, clearly. But it goes two ways. Just be a gentleman. I don't know what the hell is so hard about this.
Yeah, power.
Just be a gentleman.
It's power. It's people in power sometimes.
I guess.
Abuse it. And this clearly seems to be the case. And Stevie Cohen basically said, I'm the only one who has the power here, and you're no longer exercising any with the New York Mets.
Yeah. Yeah, this was an easy one today. An easy one. So what do they do now? They had, you know, two or three other GMs in their pipeline, one of which is our boss's son, Mark Chernoff's son, with the Indians. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they do, but I'm sure that they'll, you know, they'll pivot. And and by the way, this will go away quickly.
Because there was no longevity. He wasn't there for a long time.
Didn't languish. Correct. Let me ask you this. Somebody like Jared Turner, if he is completely...
Pardon me.
Jared Porter. If he is, you know, and I don't know the answer to this. I think I know my answer. But if he is fully forthright, right? and like undergoes counseling, and I don't mean just like profusely apologizes and moves on.
Yeah.
If he really takes the steps to own up for sure, mm-hmm. does he have a place in the game ever again?
Yeah, I'm sure he does, but it won't be in a prominent location.
Not in a prominent spot.
Yeah, because it'll come up. It'll be there. Again, this was almost 5 years
2016.
Ago. 2016. This is almost 5 years ago. Yeah. And it's still very much relevant today.
Oh, yeah, 5 years ago, but it's not like he was 15 years old five years ago.
That's right.
Like some of the tweets, like Josh Allen, and we've seen this with athletes. Mm-hmm. Things come up, you know, a lot of lyrics from songs, rap songs, and, you know, we've gone down this road, and they've had to apologize and own up to it. But the way we judge, you know, mistakes, the age is obviously very important, and you know, this is a grown man making a series of dumb mistakes, and he's going to have to live with it and hopefully be better for it. But easy call for Stevie Cohn, obviously the right call. All right, T, coming up next here, let's get with Mike Smith, all right, former head coach. We'll see what he's thinking about the games coming up this weekend, about maybe some of the head coaching issues, the process, the carousel, some of the offseason quarterback issues. We'll talk to Coach Smith coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Hitting Kyrie stuff coming up next. Kyrie Irving ready to come back, and if his head is where it needs to be, based on the way the two-thirds of the big three are kind of rolling without him, who's beating the Nets? We'll get to that conversation coming up next segment. Tiki, let's now get back to the NFL, and we're joined by a gentleman. You know, it's easy to forget. We knew he was good with Atlanta for sure, former head coach Mike Smith. But, you know, in 7 years, 20 more wins than losses, 4 double-digit win seasons. So he knows just how unforgiving the nature of the business can be. But nice resume, and I think a lot of people maybe minimize what he did there to an extent. Maybe certain parts of the country kind of forgot. Mike Smith is with us now, former head coach. Coach, how you doing today? Welcome to Tiki and Tierney. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I hope you guys are having a great day.
Yeah, so far we are. We're looking forward to having this conversation, mainly to get your thoughts on, really, the Falcons later. But first of all, with the Buccaneers, I mean, you were there when they started to, and you were the defensive coordinator, when they started to build this defense in a different way, in a new way, and now we're seeing the benefits of this. Are you surprised, or not surprised, but I mean, you kind of probably expected this, but your thoughts on this Bucs defense, which was so good over the past couple of games in the postseason?
Well, they've done an outstanding job here the last 5 or 6 games. You know, Todd Bowles has put his mark on it, and it's been fun to watch them. They're young, they're energetic. You know, they've got a rotation up front that makes them difficult, and they led the league in stopping the run. So these young guys in their secondary have really stepped up, and really they were probably the reason that they won that game. Those turnovers were the big turning point in that ball game this past weekend.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. That defense is good. I mean, we always talk about Tom Brady and, you know, how good he is offensively and the weapons, et cetera. But this Bucs team feels as balanced as I think I've seen it in many years. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they are. They're very balanced. They're, you know, they're deep at the wide receiver position. And when you've got Tom Brady and a deep group of wide receivers that can take some hits when the guys get injured. You know, they've had some guys that have missed some time in the wide receiver group, but other guys have stepped up, and you know, it's been a balanced team, especially Tiki, these last 4 or 5 games. It's going to be an interesting game this weekend watching Tom and Aaron battle it out. So I call it's another old timers game.
It is. Oh, it's about as good as it gets. I mean, you know, listen, Mike, we were talking about this yesterday. You know, sometimes you get, you know, and no disrespect intended, but sometimes you get, you know, a Blake Bortles playing at a conference championship game, and a Case Keenum, who ironically is going to be on the show next hour, Tiki. And sometimes you get Rodgers, Breeze, and, you know, I mean, Mahomes and Josh Allen. You never know what you're going to get. But this quartet is absolutely superb, and that's Mike Smith, former Falcons coach. Mike, do me a favor. So you take over the job in 2008. Right away, you produce a double-digit win season. I believe 3 of the first 4 years you were there, you won at least 10 or more games. I don't remember off the top of my head. Did you have other interviews besides the Falcons job, or no?
No, that was my first interview, Brandon. And, you know, we were very fortunate to, you know, to have a good run starting off. I think it really started with the drafting of Matt Ryan. It was a tough situation coming in. I don't know that many people really wanted that job. You know, their head coach had left and gone back to college football with four games remaining in the season. And, of course, the Michael Vick situation, that was a tough thing for our fan base.
Yeah, for sure.
But we were very fortunate to, you know, to start off running real well.
Okay, I ask you that because the way the process is going now and five of the seven jobs are filled, it looks as if the Eagles are at least focusing on McDaniels maybe more than anybody else, and we'll see what the Texans do. At this point, Mike, they might call you. Nobody knows what the Texans are going to do. But
well, let me tell you, if they call me, I'm retired.
Especially for
I'm
that
enjoying
job.
Golfing and fishing. My golf game's about as good as it's ever been.
Nice. Right. What's the index? Give us a number here, Mike. What are you shooting?
7.8.
Woo! He's single digits. He's enjoying any golf course. Attaboy. All right. I say all that, though, Mike, because trying to interview, I know you get the second interview and you get to walk into the facility and shake somebody's hand, but, you know, the first round for all these guys is on a Zoom conference call. That's got to be pretty imperfect, not only for the person being interviewed, but also the team trying to get a sense of, is this somebody we want to align ourselves with? Very unique circumstances, this coaching cycle, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I believe this. I told my team every year, you only get one chance for a first impression, mm-hmm. so you better make it a good one. Yeah. That's what I think you have to do when you're in a situation with a Zoom interview. You better make a good first impression or they're going to be off moving on to someone else. I think there's been more guys interviewed this year, so I think that maybe because of the Zoom situation where you're not able to meet in person, you're going to turn over more stones. But it's been interesting to watch from afar, and there's a lot of young dynamic coaches that are going to get an opportunity to go in and put their stamp on an organization.
You know, Coach, you got into the NFL, I'm looking at it now, with the Ravens in 1999. You were 40 years old at that time. It was 9 years before you got to what we were just talking about, the aforementioned Atlanta Falcons head coaching job. So you'd seen it. You'd done it. You'd been a coordinator. You'd lived it a little bit. Nowadays, it feels like we're running to get these young kids to be head coaches. And I know, like, they have great minds and their football X's and O's, all that stuff is one thing. But there's an intangible about being a coach that I think is hard to, for us, because we never were, put your finger on. The struggle that some of these kids have, I mean, I call them kids, they're 35, 37 years old, whatever. But that struggle, it's hard for them. And I almost feel like it's unfair sometimes that they get these jobs so early, but they're not ready for it. How do you combat that if you're an organization or the support around some of these young head coaches?
Well, I think that it's very cyclical in terms of how a hiring process goes. You can look back 30 years and there were some young coaches that came, you know, Dick Vermeil came in, you know, I'm talking way back. So it's very cyclical. And when there is success in one area, everybody kind of looks to where, you know, what is that team doing over there and why are they having that success? And, you know, there's not seven Bill Belichicks walking around, but there are a lot of up and coming, coaches that, probably are deserving a look. And I think that they've done a very good job widening the net of who they're looking for. And when I say they, I'm talking about the ownership, but it's not the head coach. It's the staff that he puts around him. I think that's something that I think people forget. Mm-hmm. My first staff, I was able to put some guys. Mike Mularkey was my offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Mike had been very successful. It's really about the guys that you put around you. It's not just one person. One person gets the blame. One person gets the pat on the back about the success or the failures. But really, it's the staff that you put together. And I think that's what people need to really dig into is what kind of staff are they putting together?
Tiki's been saying this for years, since we've, as long as we've been doing the show together, 8+ years, Tiki's been saying that from day one, and that's Mike Smith. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, assembling a staff. Yeah, the head coach is getting, you know, the first 6 years, or Matt Rhule 7 years, and $8, $9, $10, $12 million a year. He's taking the bullets. He's getting the props. But if he doesn't delegate properly and bring in the right infrastructure, team's going nowhere. I definitely hear you on that. Mike, can you explain, can you pull the curtain back a little bit? I don't know if you know Eric Bieniemy at all. Can you help us here? For a coordinator to be so discussed and seemingly in demand, at least mid-season, as we begin to surmise what teams every year, what teams might be making a coaching change. How does Bieniemy not have a job, Mike? I mean, help steer us into calm waters with this, because we're confused.
Well, I think you're confused every year when there's coaching changes. I'll look back to 2008 when I was hired. I'm sure there were a lot of people that said, who's this Mike Smith? I guarantee you that happened in certain areas. But I think one of the things that's tough, and that they're getting better at it, is guys that have lots of success, not punished, but the way that it's set up in terms of interviewing, it's not fair. They've got to come up with a better way, because guys will miss opportunities because of the success that they've had. And Eric has had so much success the last 3 years there in Kansas City, and it's got to be a fit when you. So that's what I think is the biggest thing that everybody needs to step back and say, okay, it's got to be a fit, and the fit changes, and it can change. Not from 1 year to the next. It can change from 1 week to the next.
Yeah.
It's amazing who becomes the new hottest pretty diamond or the pretty watch, that everybody's got to have.
Yeah,
it's really funny how that goes.
It really does. And we were just talking, we talked about at the top of our show how it's at least the NFL is doing the right thing this year. So it allows you those coaches that are still playing, Todd Bowles is one, obviously, as is Eric Bieniemy, to at least Zoom have conversations with these guys. And it's not complicated. Fly in and meet the guy on, for dinner or whatever it may be.
And Daboll, too. He's still playing.
And Daboll as well.
Yeah.
Arthur Smith is the new head coach at the Atlanta Falcons, and he's taken over an interesting roster. I think they've underachieved. I think anybody who can say that who's watched him over the last couple of years will say that. But the big question is Matt Ryan, and even Arthur Blank, the owner, wasn't fully committed to holding on to Matt. How much do you think he has left? He's an MVP. He's had an unbelievable career, maybe just short of Hall of Fame. But how much longer is Matt going to be the Atlanta Falcons head coach quarterback, do you think?
Well, first, I think Arthur loves Matt Ryan, and I think Arthur, when I say Arthur Blank, mm-hmm. and I think that, Arthur came out and said he's going to let the head coach make that decision, which I think is a good thing, because that's what you hire your coach to do. You hire him to let him coach. So I think he was basically making that statement for the new head coach. So there wasn't any preconceived ideas that, oh, Matt Ryan's got to be here. But I believe Matt Ryan is going to have some fantastic years in the future. We drafted him number one in the first top five picks. I think it was third.
Number three.
He's special. I mean, he came in and we won double digit games in year one. And, we went to the playoffs four out of the first 5 years, and Matt was integral to that. And he's very cerebral. He's a very good leader. And of course, when you come close and you don't get it, mm-hmm. and that's happened, it happened to us in the championship game, happened in a Super Bowl, then people start tagging you that you can't win the big one. It's such a fine line. Tiki, you know this.
Yeah, definitely.
You fight your tail off and the ball bounces one way or something happens, somebody gets hurt, you make a small mistake, it gets magnified. That's what makes football so great. And that's why it's so popular, is you really don't know what's going to happen.
I agree with you. Mike, keep going. Sorry, Coach,
no, go
my
ahead.
Bad. I'm sorry, Coach, I didn't mean to step on you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe Matt Ryan is, he's got lots of gas in the tank. He really does. And he's one heck of a competitor. That's one thing that we saw when we drafted him. I think that was the thing when Thomas and I had discussions. It was about, you know, his grit, and he has grit. Mm-hmm. And you've got to do that to be a quarterback in the National Football League.
I agree. I wouldn't give up on that myself. So you've aligned yourself with X-Tech pads. We know about them from Coach Billick. Why don't you tell us about them a little bit more, maybe something different? I know they're going off the shelves, Coach. X-Tech pads, huh?
Yes. You know, I've been involved with X-Tech since I got out of coaching, but I've been very familiar with them for a long time. I tell this story to almost anybody when we talk about with X-Tech. I was at a convention in Nashville, Tennessee, and I saw Bob Broderick do a demonstration, and it blew me away. You know, he took the pad and took a helmet and smashed his hand and asked people if they wanted to do it. I said, heck no. But when I when I saw that demonstration, it just struck me. And then I did more research, and I told Bob and Teddy Monica that, hey, we're going to get you an audience there with the Atlanta Falcons and get a chance to look at your pads, because they're unbelievable. And people know that we're trying to make the game safe, and it's got to be safer. And we've been doing it with helmets. We've been doing it with footwear. We haven't done it with pads.
Yeah.
And these pads, number one pad in the NFL in 5 years. The company's only been up for 8. It's a passion project for me to just talk about what they've been able to do, especially in these trying times with COVID. They've come up with, you know, new ways to fit players and fit them properly. And I think that's a big key, you know, and give them more range of motion. You know, Tiki, you want, you know, some guys want protection, some guys want range of motion, and X-Tech is able to give it both to everybody.
Yeah, you see some of those defensive ends with like little league pads on sometimes because they want range of motion. I needed the protection. I never got to wear them. My kids wear them now, playing high school football up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and they love them. So Bob's a good friend of mine, and they're going to keep having success because the product is great. You're absolutely right. Appreciate you, Coach.
Okay, guys. Hey, I appreciate it. Hey, enjoy the weekend. We're going to have great football. See who's going to be playing in Tampa.
Can't wait. Coach. Yeah, you got it, Coach. Thanks a lot, pal. Keep hitting them straight and pulling in those bass, buddy. There you go. All right. Let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back. The Nets, front and center. Kyrie spoke today. What did he say? And what can we expect when the duo eventually, tomorrow night, becomes the trio? We'll get that after Ack's update right now. Here's Rich.
That's a good song.
All right, Sunday on CBS, a spot in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55 is the prize. When the Bills take on the Chiefs, it's the AFC Championship game. Then we get you set for the game starting at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific with JB and the guys on the NFL today. It's the AFC Championship game Sunday on CBS, Championship Sunday. As good as it gets, especially when you talk about the names involved, the teams involved, the legacies involved. Oof, it is going to be top shelf stuff. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Kyrie appeared today. And Kyrie was, for the most part, talkative. There were a couple of things he didn't want to expand too thoroughly on. But let's play some of the sound because we can't really react to it. We don't want to assume that you've had a chance to hear it all. So we'll plow through this, and then Teek and I will craft our conversation. Just so you know, he is expected to play tomorrow night. That is one thing that we do know. He missed 5 games for personal reasons, the last 2 with conditioning, as he's tried to, you know, get his cardio back and get back in the groove physically. Again, expected to play tomorrow night. Here's Kyrie on returning back to the Brooklyn Nets. Here he is.
You know, I'm back. I'm happy to be back. And we got some great pieces, and we just move on. And I let my actions and my game speak for itself like I planned on doing. You know, just needed a pause.
Okay, so basic, as he kind of gets things going here. I didn't think the questions were incredibly probing, to be honest with you. I actually had it on in my office, and I can hear the questions being asked.
Yeah.
I thought there were a couple of good ones. I thought there were a few chances. I don't mean confrontational necessarily, but good journalistic inquiries that I thought there were opportunities absolutely missed. Without naming names, I thought there were some real opportunities that were not struck. This was a decent question. Whether or not he still loves the game of basketball, here's Kyrie Irving on that.
You know, you just got to take a step back and realize what's important. And I love to play. It's never been questioned. I've committed myself, you know, when this wasn't even a thing for me. You know, I didn't really care about media, didn't really care about the fandom. All I cared about was just the ethics of the game and being taught the fundamentals.
Okay. Now, Teague, I know that you saw the transcript and you've obviously heard these cuts. Did you see the conference call, like the video Zoom set? Did you see the actual visual?
No, I didn't see visually what he looked like when he was doing this.
Okay. The whole time, and again, I'm not, don't take this the wrong way. I do think that there's, I mean, I'm not certainly not going to sit here and diagnose Kyrie with depression. I'm going to stay in my lane. I just was a little surprised for somebody who's been gone that long. I thought he'd be a little bit more, not even attentive, like a little bit more, a little happier.
Like engaged.
Engaged.
And like,
he sat there, and I'm just doing it so you can see, and the audience can see. So I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think I saw him once, like, sit up. Not that you need military posture, but, you know, he was slumped like this the whole time, and he looked a little downtrodden.
Yeah, like out of it. But again, we don't know what the personal issue was, and he not refused, but he just declined to elaborate on it.
Yep.
And, you know, basically stated those who need to know, and everybody else just, you know, respect his privacy, which you have to do. You know, I mean, you can't dig about what's going on in his personal life. Even though there was, you know, videos of him out with his sister, and I guess his father was also at that birthday party that we saw a couple of weeks ago, but still,
yeah, he was there. Yep.
You can't make one image, or one visual define the entirety of his emotional state, you know, during that time away from the Nets. You know, I still believe, BT, that I think he struggles with, I mean, his role in the world and what he's doing versus what he kind of, I don't know, feels like he could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's outside of his family, maybe issue, but I don't know. And it's hard to speculate on it because I just don't know. I don't know Kyrie. I've met him a couple of times, but I don't know him personally. Don't know what he's about. And, you know, it's his right to do this, but I almost feel like he's coming back because he feels like he is supposed to come back, but isn't really ready to do so. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
That's kind of what it feels like when you listen to how he answers things. It's like, yeah, I know I need to play basketball and I'm supposed to play basketball. And everybody wants me to play basketball, talking about his teammates and his coach and all those other things. But I think he just kind of is seeing, and, you know, from his perspective, and it's because the only thing that matters is his perspective, that there are so many greater things in basketball, and he just can't influence them because he plays basketball. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know how this, I don't know. Resolve is the wrong word. There's nothing to be resolved. Like, there's nothing to be, not like waiting on something, another shoe to fall. You know, there's nothing like that. But I don't know how this thing looks 2 months from now or a year from now.
But that is the resolution. I think you had it right. I wonder what the ultimate resolution is because, you know, I still believe that there's either a lack of respect. I'm not going to make it out to be too big, but I do believe that, as I've said many times on the show, on some level, Kyrie just does not, maybe on every level, does not respect Steve Nash. You don't ignore texts before a game and after a game for your head. You just don't do that if you respect somebody. It's just not how you...
In his defense, he doesn't really know him. I mean, other than being his coach now, he doesn't really know him, right?
Well, I mean, he knows him as a legend of the game. I mean, there's a familiarity there.
True, but he doesn't. But I think Kyrie's the kind of guy that if you're not in his circle, then you're just anybody outside of it.
Yeah, but that's not good enough because your head coach needs to be in your circle. I don't accept.
But he's his new head coach. That's my point.
So what? It doesn't matter if he was a coach a week ago.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter.
They're just, I don't know. I just don't think the relationship is there. And I don't know if Kyrie has many deep relationships.
Well,
And it feels like that's the case because otherwise he would have. I mean, he reached out to Caris LeVert, didn't he? And Anthony.
Maybe he respects Caris LeVert.
And Kevin Durant.
He respects Kevin Durant.
I can't sit here and speculate that he doesn't respect Steve Nash.
I can.
It just doesn't make any sense. He just
doesn't
know.
It makes total sense.
He doesn't know Steve Nash.
Wait, call him Atik. It makes total sense, and I'll tell you why. Because it's the same guy who said, we don't really have a head coach. He said that. Those were his words. And in any event, I don't need to like rehash all the old stuff. I want to play something. I don't know if it's going to be great, but this was, we don't have this. This is important. And it's short, and I jammed up my computer, hopefully as loud as it gets. This is the question There is no answer from Kyrie Irving because he doesn't audibly respond. He barely lifts his head and shrugs. And this, to me, was actually sad. When you hear the question, it'll be framed in a moment. Listen up, guys.
Hey, Kyrie, just wanted to ask, you know, on a mental, maybe spiritual, emotional, even physical front, is everything okay with you?
That was it. Hey, Kyrie, on a mental, spiritual, and emotional level, I just want to ask, is everything okay with you? And Kyrie was literally leaning on his hands like this, looking into the camera, like almost like he was getting ready to take a nap. Mm-hmm. Didn't say yes. And he very sluggishly and almost reluctantly, like he paused and he thought about it, and he gave a very half-hearted, yeah, I'm okay. But yeah. Never, it was a little disconcerting, I got to be honest with you. I know I don't have a medical degree, but he didn't look happy.
I think you might be reading a little bit too much into that.
Well, that's fine. Did you see it?
I did not. But
okay. Well, when you see it, I can
imagine it though.
But you got to see it before you say that.
But I think that Kyrie, like, it matters who's asking the question and the environment in which the question is being asked, right? That's a deep question. That's a really deep question to ask someone who's just taken a personal hiatus for a week and a half or almost 2 weeks. And you're going to ask that in front of, you know, people who Kyrie, let's be honest, doesn't give a you know what about. Yeah. So if you ask him that privately, maybe he answers it differently. But you're going to ask him on the stage, bare your soul. Let me see you cry type of situation. Go blank objective. Yourself. You know what I mean?
How
seriously.
About just a, yeah, that I'm,
if
I'm
if I'm
better,
Kyrie,
guys.
If I'm, Kyrie, that's what I'm thinking at that moment. Kyrie was only doing his media because he had to. Okay. He wasn't doing this because he wanted to. He wasn't clamoring, "Hey guys, I got to get in front of the media. I got to explain myself."
No,
he was
I
doing this
that.
Because he has to. And he's a deeply personal person.
Yeah.
And I refuse to read into it without knowing what's actually going on.
I got you. I thought it was a look of a lack of clarity from Kyrie. Maybe he just doesn't want to answer the question. He answered other questions. And I thought it was positioned softly enough where it wasn't overly intrusive. We were asking you the questions because you were gone for 2 weeks. It was a fair question. Third hour coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.